From Flagstaff Mountain in Boulder, Colorado, welcome to the GCN Show.
Welcome to the GCN Show. Coming up this week, I got smoked by an illegal e-bike on a bike path. Does it matter? Does it matter that these bikes are out there? And what can be done about it?
Plus, the bike thief who got more than he bargained for, a new law in Spain which should make it even nicer for cycling, plus more good news for cyclists in the US and Paris as well.
I mean, this sounds like a very positive show, Dan.
Well, we're giving the people what they want, Si. This week in the world of cycling, we learn that the World Tour has started already. The Women's Tour Down Under kicked off with a win for EF Oatley's Naomi Rook.
We also learned that the most famous cyclist in the world last week was actually the actor Timothy Chalamet, who broke the internet by riding a Lime public hire bike onto the red carpet of his Bob Dylan film premiere.
He did it because it was faster than driving and he didn't want to be late, but in his haste, he didn't dock it properly. So actually, he got a £65 fine, which is about $80, isn't it?
Amazing. Lime bikes, probably over the moon, or the publicity they got. So perhaps they'll waive the fine.
They shouldn't they?
Now, finally this week, I specifically learnt that being overtaken by someone on a bike can be a frustrating experience.
I still can't believe this, that you, Si Richardson, were overtaken by another cyclist. I thought you were still fit.
Well, I mean, just wait a second, because I do have an excuse, Dan.
Thought so.
And actually, it was more than frustrating. It got me thinking about a much wider issue.
A bigger issue?
Yeah.
Than someone being better than you
on a
bike?
He wasn't better than me, okay? Right, for the record, I was riding into work this morning down a section of the world-famous Bristol to Bath cycle path, which was actually the first to be created by the national charity Sustrance.
You're adding interesting trivia
to the conversation as well.
Well,
just give me some context for anyone that doesn't live in the immediate local area. Anyway, there I was doing a little bit of zone two before work, as I do, and I heard a bing, bing behind me, and I was a little bit taken aback that someone was coming up behind me and ringing a bell at me as well.
And what sort of speed were you going at this point?
I was in like 35, 36 k an hour.
Zone two.
Well, it was a little bit downhill. It was downhill, and I was riding my Canyon Air Road with one by,
right,
which, if anyone watched the video on GCN Tech, will know that it is very fast.
Yeah.
Anyway, this guy comes past me, right? About my age, wearing casual clothes, doing about 38k an hour.
So what's the catch here?
Well, so the catch, he was wearing normal clothes. No, the catch was that he was riding a high bike. So like an e-bike, city bike, right, type thing. But you could hear that the motor was still running. It was still giving him power, okay, which in the UK legally needs to cut out at 25 kilometres an hour. So I am deducing that it had been illegally de-restricted.
So you were passed by an illegal e-bike on the bike path.
Yes, I was, yeah.
Firstly, breaking the law, so obviously a bit of an idiot.
Bit of an idiot.
We can conclude.
Yeah.
And then doing it on a bike path, a bit worse, even worse, really.
It is, right? Exactly what I thought. He's endangering other people on the bike path, be they walkers or runners or other slower-moving cyclists, like me.
Sorry, I was waiting for a but. I thought there was a but coming.
Well, there is a but. There is a but, yeah. So he was doing 2K an hour faster than me, roughly. Mm. I could have got on his wheel,
yeah,
but I didn't want to go into zone three. So how is he any worse than me?
Oh, I see.
Like, yes. Let it be said, I don't ever go like fast on the bike path. I would never do intervals or sprints or anything on it. But even going steady on a fast bike isn't slow. Plus is the fact that this guy was on a bike in the first place and not in a car. He was making the most of safe, quiet infrastructure, probably making him a little bit healthier by doing it. So today, it felt like the world benefited from this dude riding an illegal e-bike at 8 o'clock in the morning. Mm. So how bad was it really?
Well, this is quite the moral dilemma, Si.
Yeah.
And one that is being debated around the world, even in countries where faster and more powerful e-bikes are not illegal,
yeah,
like in the US. In fact, two states just this last week announced they were looking at bills that seek to ban high-speed e-bikes from bike lanes and sidewalks.
Yep, so there was one in Oregon, and then the New York City governor as well was looking at classifying the heaviest and fastest e-bikes, actually as mopeds, which would then mean that they need a license and registration, as well as meaning compulsory helmet wearing for the rider.
Mm. I think part of the issue in the US, or that the US has, is in the various classifications of e-bikes.
Yes.
There's class one, which are pedal assist and restricted past 20 miles per hour.
Okay.
Class two, which have a throttle and are restricted past 20 miles per hour.
Yeah.
And then class three, which are also pedal assist, up to 28 miles per hour. Now, to my mind, they are three very different bikes, but they're all currently classified as e-bikes.
Yeah. You know, I've never heard that classification simplified like that.
So thank you.
Yeah, genuinely, it's always completely baffled me, but that does make sense. And I totally agree. So Europe is one step ahead here, right? So you have e-bikes, which are up to 25k an hour, and then you've got Speed Pedelecs, which are effectively the same as Class 3. And they already do need a license and registration, plus a whole host of other stipulations, like they can't be modified and all this kind of stuff. However, that doesn't seem to stop the wider public here from getting confused and calling everything on two wheels with an electric motor an e-bike.
BBC?
Yes.
You know the one.
The BBC came under a little bit of stick for a poor, by their standards, programme about illegal e-bikes.
Mm. Anyway, we are getting a bit sidetracked
we
here,
are,
aren't
yes.
we? Are we saying that high-speed pedal assist e-bikes should be allowed on bike paths or
no,
shouldn't?
They shouldn't,
okay.
I don't think. While in this case, I think this bike path is quiet enough and it's wide enough and it's actually straight enough, so it's not too big a deal. You can't start to say that some bike paths are okay and others not, so you've got to have a blanket ban, as we have in Europe and as I think they probably need in the US.
Okay, so are we also saying that overly competitive, washed-up, middle-aged ex-pro cyclists on aero bikes should also be banned from said bike paths?
Tell it how it is, Dan. Crikey, why don't you just throw the ankles in there for good measure?
That's a fair point.
Yeah, well, yeah, all right, it is a fair point. What I have concluded is that it's the responsibility of every cyclist to ride safely and considerately, isn't it? So it doesn't matter what bike you're riding or what your FTP is. So on that bit of bike path, I feel personally that 35k an hour is fine, as long as you slow down when you're overtaking people, be they walkers or cyclists, and you slow down when people are coming the other way as well, right? On another section of bike path, in fact, on another section of bike path, on my commute, which is way narrower and way busier, there's no way I'd go above 20k now.
No. Well, I think most people, myself included, would agree with you
there. Do you agree with that?
I would say so, yeah.
Okay.
I suppose the difference is that turbo e-bikes accelerate faster as well as go faster, and you're less likely to get an inexperienced rider on a normal bike going more quickly. But even so, it's quite a blurred boundary.
It is, isn't it? Now, one suggestion I've seen is to have variable speed limits on bike paths. But then the issue is that you don't actually have to have a speedometer on a bike, do you? And nor should that ever become a legal requirement. So I kind of can't see that one working. In my opinion, this wasn't a problem until turbo e-bikes came about. So the answer does seem to be to legislate against them where necessary, or in countries that already have legislation, to educate people, and riders particularly, as to what is allowed and what's not. Because, yes, there have always been idiots riding inconsiderately, but it's...
Well, not inconsiderately.
Yeah, just idiots.
Just on a bike.
There's always been idiots, but it seems to be less of an issue on normal bikes.
It's a bit of a Wild West right now,
isn't it?
And hopefully some clarification will come soon on this. But all that aside, do you know what the most important thing to remember in all of this is?
No, what's that?
Compared to motor vehicles, e-bikes, be they legal or illegal, are way, way less dangerous. Here in the UK, for example, between 2019 and 2023, cyclists of all kinds were responsible for 12 pedestrian fatalities. How many were killed by drivers or motor vehicles, do you know? Almost 2,000.
No
1,955, to be precise.
Bloody hell, why are we even having this argument?
Well, basically because you brought it up. I think you're fine.
Okay, so I got overtaken this morning by an illegal e-bike.
Yep.
Does it matter? No, absolutely not. In the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter one jot, does it? Basically,
I don't think so, but I think it's important to have the discussion.
It is, well, because it feels worse than it is, right? And it feels like it's spiralling out of control, and that actually we all need to remember, all of us, that... I mean, 12 fatalities is 12 too many, right? I think we can all agree on that. But what a drop in the ocean.
Compared to 1955, yes.
Totally. What do you guys think at home, anyway? Is this a problem that needs fixing, or is it something that's blown completely out of proportion?
Was Si just hurt being overtaken by someone on a bike, albeit with a motor inside it?
I could have got on his wheel. I told you, I could have done.
I was going to say you could have out-sprinted him, and then I had second thoughts.
No, I couldn't
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now, and we're going to start with news of bike theft. Not the most positive subject, but this one has a good and particularly satisfying ending.
Yeah, giving the people what they want, Si, as mentioned at the start. So this was something we saw on RNZ in New Zealand. So a group of elite cyclists had stopped for a post-training beverage and meal, when all of a sudden, they noticed an opportunistic thief riding off into the distance on one of their bikes that they'd left outside. So they gave chase.
Yeah, now according to the article, the thief only made it three blocks before being caught rather out of breath by two of the cyclists, one of whom, according to some news reports, rode the Tour de France. Now, we can't actually work out who it is, even by process of elimination.
No.
There's not a huge number of Kiwis have raced the Tour de France yet. My money's on Julian Dean.
Is it?
Or
we did do some in-depth.
Hayden Rolston.
Well, they both could be quite angry, couldn't they?
Yeah, Julian more so.
I mean, understandably, if your bike gets nicked, or your mates.
They were angry all the time.
We did some in-depth research on who it could have been for a good 2.5 to 3 minutes, didn't we, earlier on today?
Oh, at least. Anyway. I was all over Strava, stalking every ex-pro cyclist from New Zealand.
Something similar happened to me once in France in 2001.
Were you fast enough to get it back?
I'm pretty sure. Let me tell you a story. I might have told you this before, but basically, I was with Russell Downing in France at the time, racing over there in Troyes.
Famous British ex-pro cyclist.
Yeah, Team Sky. We left our bikes outside the 10 franc shop, which would now be the 1 euro shop. Obviously, it was that long ago. And I was a bit nervous leaving our Bianchi bikes, albeit only with Ortegra, which was much cheaper at the time, out the front.
Ten,
and he said, no, I do this all the time, it's absolutely fine. But I was still nervous, so I kept having a look outside. And then at one point, I looked outside, his bike was there, mine had vanished. So we gave chase, Russell on his bike and me on foot. So I started off in front because Russell had to get onto his bike, and we caught him pretty quickly.
Who did? Russell?
Both of us.
Really?
Yeah. He wasn't far away. And then we had this really awkward exchange because the thief with my bike stopped and realised that he'd been caught, looked at two very weedy-looking cyclists. So he turned around and he just gave me my bike back. And then we didn't really know what to do, so we walked back towards the 10-franc shop and the thief walked in the same direction as us, back towards the 10-franc shop. So we walked awkwardly in quite close proximity to the person that had just stolen my bike. And we didn't really know what to do, but we had the bike back anyway.
Well, there we go. Another great story from the archive. I mean, if only social media had been around in that time, that would have gone viral for sure.
I'd have probably been rich enough to retire had that sort of viral content spread at the time.
Had he got further, it was just as well that it was Russ that still had his bike, because he for sure would have been able to chase him down.
Yeah, he was fast, Russ.
He was much faster. Yeah. Anyway, moving on. Road CC. Have just reported that a new law in Spain is being created which will require drivers to slow to 20 kilometres per hour below the speed limit while overtaking cyclists.
Which makes a lot of sense, especially on faster roads,
doesn't it?
The example given is that dropping from 90 to 70 kph would do a lot to make cyclists feel safer, even if those cyclists don't have a rear-view mirror.
Exactly, yeah. However, we've thought of a problem, haven't we? Because Spanish roads are some of the smoothest, if not the smoothest roads on the planet. It's like paradise, basically, isn't it? A fairly fit cyclist can easily ride at 35k an hour, which would in theory mean that it would be impossible for drivers to overtake a cyclist on any 50 kilometre per hour road or slower.
There's the conundrum.
Yeah, so what do they do?
Well, I guess there's got to be a little bit of wiggle room, presumably.
Possibly.
Also, they would have no problems overtaking me, even at a 30kph zone. Me ploddling on 10kph.
You can run at 10k an hour these days.
This is a good point, Si. This is a good point. Now, we mentioned the incredible transformation of Paris recently, from car-choked capital city to cycling paradise.
Yeah, almost cycling paradise, actually. Someone in the comments section, whose name escapes me, apologies, said that actually it wasn't very nice to ride in.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but anyway,
that comment.
We need to go check that one out.
Anyway, I saw this tweet from urban planner Brent Tederian, which shows the same map of Paris, but displaying air quality in 5-year intervals. Pretty clear to see how much it's improved over the last 5 years.
Yeah. For podcast listeners, by the way, imagine a bright red map that goes to basically like a pale yellow and green. It's really quite striking. Now, critics may well say that it's a reduction in diesel cars or like newer cars that are less polluting or an increase in electric vehicles. But frankly, to see an apparent shift of this magnitude, that doesn't stack up for me. So hopefully this is enough for other city authorities and leaders to take note. It would certainly look good on like a PowerPoint presentation, wouldn't it?
It would look fantastic.
Wouldn't it just? Yeah.
Forbes reported on some positive progress over in the USA as well. The network of bike routes, both on and off-road, that make up the United States bicycle route system, has increased by 3,500 miles thanks to new routes in Missouri, Indiana and Kansas.
Now, there is now 23,156 miles of routes in that network across the country, which you can see here on this map from adventurecycling.org.
Well, you better describe that as well for podcast listeners.
So imagine a map of the United States of America and then draw quite a lot of lines all over it.
I mean, your descriptive skills are off the charts as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, an update from our side at GCN now. It's been a while, actually, since we've mentioned the GCN Plus docs that are available for our Casket and Bead on YouTube members. So some good news, we've just uploaded another selection of films for you to watch.
Eight, to be precise, including the Donegal 555, The Wild Atlantic Way, and Andy's Adventure in Colombia. You know, I think back to that documentary all the time. Absolutely amazing. Mountains, The Zonkalan, that was me as well, but slightly more painful memories from that one, as you can imagine. The feedback on what we've already uploaded has been absolutely fantastic as well, so thank you all to that. If you aren't already a member and you're interested in watching the 50-plus films that are available, simply click on the Join button on desktop or Android mobile. You can't still join it from an iPhone yet. That's nothing to do with us.
Yeah, you have to be to the desktop if you're an iPhone user.
That's right. And you'll see the options and details about joining as a member.
Which helps us, incidentally, support as a channel so that we can continue making the free-to-view content that you're watching right now or listening to, which we tried to take up a notch, actually, over the last few months since we became an independent company again. Quite a few of you have noticed that and commented about it as well, which is very motivating on our side.
Oh, it is. Yeah. I mean, it's always great to hear, so thank you. And yeah, much appreciated. A reminder now that we have a Ruvi giveaway on at the moment. So up for grabs is a 12-month subscription to the platform, plus an indoor kit bundle that includes jersey, shorts and socks.
So to put yourself in with a chance of winning that, head to the link in the description below. And a reminder as well that entries will close this coming Friday at 10 in the morning GMT.
You can ride in Colombia on Ruvi, if you so wish, in fact. Right then, good luck with that, everyone. We haven't done an update on your fundraising yet, have we?
Thought I got away with that one.
You almost did, Dan, you almost did. Where are we up to now?
Oh, well, it was $9,000 raised, and then just before we started recording the show, Si, I had a very generous donation of £500.
No way.
One person, yes.
Wow.
So thank you, I think, again.
That's so cool, isn't it? So just 5.5 to go. We are so going to get there. Yes.
Unfortunately, I think you're right, and
we
are.
We totally are, yeah.
I also had a text from a mate the other day who was looking to sponsor me and looked on my social media for a link to be able to sponsor me and couldn't find any.
I have to be fair, also noticed that you've not been particularly forthcoming with publicity from your own channels.
Of course I haven't. Of course I haven't. I mean, the ideal scenario for me personally would be that we raise £14,999 for the Ambitious About Autism charity, which would mean a lot of money to that charity, but I don't have to do the ride. Everyone's a winner.
Let it be known, Dan, that you will not get stuck on £14,999. I will see to it, personally, that that does not happen.
You can all stop donating now. So I'm going to dip in his pocket for £5,500.
Well, yeah, OK, anyway. If you'd like to help me, please get down over the magical £15,000. You'll find a link in the description where you can make a donation. Dan is actually refusing to even start training on his bike until we reach the target. So in some ways, the later we leave it, the harder it will be for Dan and the better the video at the end of it.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought that through properly.
Not really, which is strange for you, Dan. Right, we are unfortunately going to finish Cycling Shorts actually with some sad news now, aren't we? One of the true US pro cycling trailblazers, Doug Shapiro, has died following a climbing accident. He was 65.
He was the third American to compete in and finish the Tour de France as part of the legendary 7-Eleven team, which made their debut at the race in 1986. Our thoughts, of course, go out to his family, friends, and his former teammates. Next up, hack /bodge of the week. First up, this time, it's this one from Jay Walden, bikepacking pannier brake roadside fix. My family and I were bikepacking on Cumberland Island. We were about half a mile away from our campsite for the night when the clip holding my pannier frame on my bike broke. We were able to limp to the campsite, but the next day I used some cordage I had on hand and jury-rigged a solution using my knowledge from my days in the Scouts.
Nice.
I started with a cinch knot. They're easy, aren't they? Cinch knots.
Hello?
And tied the pannier frame to my bike frame. It worked like a charm, and I was able to bike the last 13Ks back to the ferry. It was easy to assemble and disassemble and involved no zip ties. You're welcome, Si.
Yeah, well, that's amazing. Any bikepacking adventure, there should be some adventure cord, shouldn't there?
Mm.
Perhaps as a kind of bracelet. I've seen that done. Survival bracelet. I mean, that's brilliant, isn't it? That's exactly the kind of thing that you want in your toolkit to guard against such eventualities.
I should give a description of the photo for our podcast listeners.
You should, yeah.
It's the back of a bike frame with some string and a cinch knot.
Yes.
You can see the cinch knot clearly.
You can, yeah. I mean, at first glance, it looks pretty dodgy because there's a big disc rotor in the way, isn't there? But, you know, why not? Super cool. All right, yeah, there's a hack from me.
There's a hack from me as well.
Next up, we've got this one from L333ng.
It's a license plate in the UK, doesn't it?
It does, actually, yeah. Anti-theft North of England style, which is absolutely amazing. Effectively, it's a bike wrapped up in sort of kind of basic tarpaulin hanging outside a first floor window on your typical terraced street that you get here
in the
UK.
It's been winched up, doesn't it?
I have no idea how.
Well, I'm presuming
that.
I mean, there's no way they can get it out of that window, though. Nope. Only the top part of the window opens, which is not big enough for the bike. So it must be winched up out of thieves' arm's length.
Yeah. I mean, like, a determined thief with a stepladder could, in theory, get that bike down. But, you know, I like that.
I've just got visions of a thief with a sort of an eye mask thing and then black and white stripy top with a ladder.
Either that, or, you know, when you're pruning, like, tall branches.
Oh, yes.
The loppers on a stick. So as long as you've got a catcher down below, you could easily cut the...
Yeah, they're quite cheap in the middle of Lidl now as well, aren't they?
Are they?
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't know, mate, but there we go.
You don't know. You never looked down the middle of Lidl?
I don't shop in Lidl.
Yeah, Aldi.
We got an Aldi nearby, yeah.
Only shop in Waitrose.
What were we saying? Hack?
I don't know. I'm going to say hack, yeah, but ingenuity.
I mean, bike
storage.
Probably
not much space inside the house.
That's it. Bike storage is tough. Why not hang it out the front? I think that's brilliant. They've got no front garden. Genius. Hack from me.
Hack from me as well, then. Next up, this from Clarky Clark. Brake lever modification. A mate asked me to look at his front derailleur as the lever wasn't working. I discovered that he'd lost some parts from the gear cable guide under the lever hood, so I made some modifications to the cable guide, which gave him enough cable tension to change the front derailleur. 3 weeks later, and it's still working. And for podcast listeners, there are zip ties involved.
Three zip ties. Yeah. Now, as a temporary fix, I'm all in.
3 weeks
That's
later, late. Though.
3 weeks later. I mean, I can see why you wouldn't be bothered to fix it, because STIs are pricey bits of kit, aren't they, right? What I can't work out is how you lose parts from underneath the rubber lever body cover. Like, how does that work?
I have no idea.
I mean, that just seems like...
It's a lot of corrosion from Zwifting, isn't it?
Careless, even by my standards, to lose bits of shifter.
Also, I presume this photo, which we're looking at, was taken just after the initial use of zip ties, because they haven't even been cut off at the ends. You can't get the lever hood back over them.
Well, and to be fair, even if you cut them and roll the lever hood back on, we know how sharp the ends of zip ties are. It would make short work of that rubber, 100%. You'd be bleeding.
Well, I think we're both getting bodge anyway, aren't we? Because it was on there for 3 weeks.
Yeah, it would have been a hack if you'd said it got my mate home. The fact that you said 3 weeks later, bodge.
Okay.
Brutal, but there we go. Right, lastly, we've got this one. Ah, dog with sunglasses in a cargo bike. This is from David Jensen. So I wanted to ride with my golden retriever, yet to be able to see him and have him run next to me. I purchased a Long John electric cargo bike and with the help of a friend built two types of boxes so I could ride with my golden retriever named Salt and a large box so that our Newfoundland named Pepper could also ride. How cool is that?
They're not sunglasses, Si, they're doggles, apparently.
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh, my word.
That's what you call dog goggles. I can't even say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, I can imagine
tongue
that.
Twister.
To be fair, I think this is very cool. I obviously have a cargo bike.
Yeah.
And
a dog.
Yeah, she does not like going in the cargo bike. She absolutely hates it, to the point where I got her in the cargo bike and we rode to where we would go for a walk. And at the end of said walk, she refused to come back. She did a runner. She never ever go, like, she's
never to be seen again.
Pretty much. I had to honestly retrace my steps for a long time to go and get her. So yeah, not a fan. And now I've got two dogs and the young one's completely bonkers. So he's not going in a cargo bike anytime soon.
No.
But anyway, this I think is cool.
Yeah, I think it's cool as well. I'm going to say hack.
Yeah, hack from me too.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
Well, a reminder that that is the part of the show, hack/bodge of the week, that you can get involved in. All you need to do is submit your own hacks or bodges or any you've seen out and about in the street, maybe a winched bike to prevent bike theft and users' bike storage outside the house.
Anything goes, ones. Basically, yeah.
globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader.
It's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a witty caption in the comments section down below that relates to a photo that we will give you shortly. Results first, though.
This is the photo that we gave you last week. It is a Belgian and European cyclocross champion, Thibaut Nace, who, spoiler alert, also won the Benidorm World Cup.
Oh, he was Sunday. Looking good, wasn't he?
He was then, but in this particular photo, he is dragging a Lidl shopping trolley alongside him. Instantly, we got a message in from Chris Rides Bicycles to say, fun fact, in Germany, we call shopping trolleys Rentner Porsche, which literally translates to retirement Porsche, which is fantastic.
I tell you what, that is that's a phrase that needs to be translated worldwide, doesn't it? It's better than granny trolley.
Yeah, it's way better, isn't it?
Way better than a granny fantastic. Trolley. Yeah, I like that. It's not a caption, though, is it?
No. So the winner is...
Yeah, oh, Chris, sorry about that. The winner is...
Jim Porter, 8364, who put, Trek's new shopping trolley is lighter, stiffer and more aero than its previous version.
Oh, I love it. Right, get in touch and we will get your Camelback water bottle out to you. What's this week's photo, Dan?
This week's photo comes from the Women's Santos Tour Down Under. That is the Swiss champion and eventual overall winner, Naomi Rueg. I will get you started this week.
Go for it.
Naomi Rueg's secret to her success at the Santos Tour Down Under is the new, smaller, more lightweight, more aeropoc helmet.
I see what you've done there, mate. I like it. For podcast listeners, Naomi is not wearing a helmet. However, her teammate behind is perfectly placed to make it look like she's wearing...
A miniature helmet.
A miniature POC helmet. Yeah, I think that's good. Get involved in the comment section down below. If you've got a witty caption, stick it there. We'll enjoy reading them and pick a winner next week.
Some comments of the week now before we let you know what's coming up on the channel in the next 7 days. And we'll start with three that were left underneath last week's show, which talked about the potential extinction of gravel bikes.
Touched a nerve, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, there were a lot of responses, weren't
there? A lot of responses, yeah, it was wicked to see.
I loved this one, though, from Joe Logjam, who put, a gravel-specific extinction is exactly the same as an ordinary extinction, except you get charged 50% more.
I like that. I don't agree with you, Joe. I think an aero extinction would definitely cost 50% extra. I think gravel's quite a good value most of the time.
Well,
except for gravel clothing.
You said it wasn't good value compared to hardtail mountain bikes last week.
Well, that is very true. Yeah. But they're the most bargainous things of all
most
time.
Most bargainous.
Most bargainous.
Not yeah. Bargainous.
Bargainous, yeah. Balder said he's a 58-year-old gravel rider. Went from a road bike in the 80s to a hardtail in the 2000s. I bought a Cannondale Topstone Carbon last year, moving back to drop bars. The wider tyres and more relaxed riding position are the reason I went to a gravel bike over a road bike. Speed isn't a requirement for me anymore, just comfort, and this bike does the job. There you go, that's interesting. Going from a hardtail back to drop bars.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bazza 1968 put, there's a fine line between a pleasant gravel ride, in brackets fire roads, towpaths, crap UKB roads, and a neck wrist-jarring ride from hell, in brackets anything with proper roots and boulders, where an XC hardtail takes over.
Well, I mean, it is a fine line, isn't it? Because what about a gravel bike with wider tyres and suspension forks and this, that and the other?
Yeah.
This is the problem.
It is, yeah.
I also snuck an extra one in from last week's show, Dan. Chris Hayes said, Si, don't let Dan's comments upset you, which I thought was really nice. Although he did then go and say, I've never thought of you as classy.
I think classy but boring is right up your street. I stick by my claim.
That's the problem.
Next up, a cover from underneath the 10 best climbs in the world. Jules Burke put, given my current fitness, could you do a review of the top 10 flat roads with a guaranteed tailwind, please? Thank you, please. Whilst Langston Rocks put, did 5 of those last year. I'd say there are probably at least 20 climbs missing from this top 10 list. Yeah, there's a lot to choose from, isn't there?
I mean, the top 100 climbs of the world would be an epic video, but I'm not entirely sure.
Crikey, yeah.
Yeah, that'll be a long one. Right then, underneath Connor's FTP epic, 7 FTP tests in 7 days. Sean said, not sure if this is a conscious thing at GCN now that you're free from your corporate overlord, but I love the idea of each presenter having their own long-term passion projects. Dan with his longevity journey, which is hopefully a very long-term passion project, isn't it, by its very definition. Me with commuting, maybe Connor on different types of fitness, Alex on upgrading bikes, Ollie on endurance riding. It could be an awesome thing for GCN and us viewers.
And Gix, a 750 pilot, added, Hank for stunts, don't forget the Hank. Good point.
Jay Bookman said, I'd love to see a follow-up of you attempting to actually ride 403 watts for 1 hour. It's funny you say that, actually, but that's precisely what Connor has got to do.
Good luck, Connor. Anyway, last comment also underneath that video came in from NTK. Holy hell, what kind of HRV is this? I'm feeling great when it's above 60 for me. Yikes, the gap between GC and former pros and normal people is huge. I actually replied to that because the highest I think I've ever seen is just under 50.
Yeah, HRV being heart rate variability, isn't it? Yeah, I too was quite impressed with Connor's HRV because mine was pretty low.
Was it? I thought yours wasn't too bad.
It's been a while since I've tracked it,
if
I'm honest.
It's gone down quite significantly.
Probably, yeah. I think it was pre-40th birthday.
Oh, yeah. When it dips like 2025.
Yeah. Yeah, no. No
what
idea.
Was it?
I think it was about yours, about 60. But it used to fluctuate quite a lot.
Did it? Mm. Well, mine fluctuates when I'm drinking, but when I'm not, it's quite steady, sort of high 30s.
But that's because you pretty much do the same thing.
Yeah. I've got like sort of Groundhog Day at the moment.
Routine, yeah.
Anyway, let's get on to what's coming up on the channel over the next 7 days, starting with Thursday, a video from Si about why he thinks he might need to ride slower. And it's actually nothing to do with what happened to him on the bike path this morning.
No, it really isn't, actually. And that's not even remotely linked to it. No, this is just a realisation that I might be missing out on life, basically, by being a little bit obsessed with
riding too fast.
Well, not specifically riding too fast, but the sort of pursuit of... Actually, no, yeah. I mean, even on my cargo bike, I want to go as fast as I possibly can. So, yeah. But, you know, I had a bit of an epiphany. So, made a video about it.
We've not had this coffee machine chat yet.
No,
I look forward to having it.
Saved it for Thursday, haven't I?
On Saturday, it's a film about cycling vigilantes. So Connor has gone off to London. I'm going to have a check with Si here, just have a quick whisper. How much can we say about this?
All of it, I think.
All of it, okay. So he's gone to see Cycling Mikey, who most of you, I think, watching this in the UK will have heard of. For those elsewhere, or if you haven't heard of him, he does a lot of riding around London with a camera on his helmet and his bike, or just on his helmet. Either way, he's trying to get drivers who are breaking the law, and that predominantly means looking at their phone whilst at the wheel, even if they're sat still in traffic.
Yeah, Connor went full Louis Theroux on this one, didn't he? And he said it was a brilliant day, absolutely bonkers. I've not actually seen this yet, so I cannot wait.
No, Connor was a bit... he was very interested, let's put it that way, to see what it was all about and how Mikey went about his business.
He was crapping himself.
He was, yeah, but he came back... in a very positive mood about it all, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
So I look forward to watching that as well.
Yeah.
And on Sunday, it's a video I've been working on about how much different World Tour riders' training really is in 2025. So Connor did a brilliant video on why the speeds are getting quicker and quicker just a couple of months ago. This really focuses in on just the training itself, not the nutrition, not the aerodynamics, etc. How much different is the training? Because I looked back at some of the stuff I'd been doing in the past, and the first thing I was ever prescribed by my first ever coach was a load of Zone 2 riding in the winter of 1997 or 8, I think it was. And then in 2010, in January, on a team training camp, I was doing 40-20s. So 40 seconds hard, 20 seconds a bit easier, etc. A couple of things that we're hearing a lot about in the last 12 months to 2 years or so.
It's surprised you, this video, hasn't it, making this one?
Yeah, no, I've been really enjoying it. So I've spoken to a World Tour rider and a World Tour coach. Hopefully I'm going to get a second one before the video comes out. But yeah, very interesting indeed.
Dan's going to make a comeback now.
Yeah. He's
got all the knowledge.
Well, no, I think this is the opposite of that. It's actually, I've come to the conclusion I was doing most things right and I still wasn't that good. It's just like, yeah, I feel like I made the most of what I had. Let's put it that way.
That, mate, is possibly the best, like, conclusion to a career could ever have, isn't it? You'd be like, oh, I did my best.
Yeah.
That's mega, innit? I like that. Now, we mentioned at the beginning of the show about the women's tour down under. The men's tour down under starts this week too, right?
When this comes out, it will have already started.
There
Stage
you go.
One's done and dusted.
A reminder that you can watch pretty much all the action, can't you? Be that Women's World Tour, Men's World Tour on Discovery Plus.
And Max, if you're over in the US.
Yeah, there you go. Right, what a positive show.
It was, yeah. I'm not expecting many views because of the positivity. It doesn't sell.
No, but if you have enjoyed the show and the positivity, spread the love. Give us a like, share it, that kind of vibes.
Yeah, and don't forget not to donate to my charity fundraising because Si is going to complete it up to the 15 grand.
Less positive.